We'll start, just in case you are here on House Bill 3418 and 3419, the sponsor, Representative Merkley, has asked me to take those off the schedule today. That was after the agenda had been posted, so we were not able to do that. But my intention will be that if anybody is here, especially if you've traveled to testify on 3418 mm-hmm. or 19, we will receive your testimony. Otherwise, I will just tap those in, and I don't need to hear anything. But again, if you've traveled to come here today, we will honor that and be glad to receive your testimony, but otherwise not. So with that little agenda note, we will open a public hearing first on House Bill 2852. Steve
Meyer. Mr. Chair, members, House Bill 2852. You may recall from last session that the legislature set up a special task force on special education and school finance, and that task force sunset July 1, 2003. House Bill 2852 would extend the sunset on that task force to July 1st, 2005, so give it an additional 2 years to do further work.
Stop. Who's that? Who is that?
It's apparition.
It's about 60% of Cold Barn.
Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Barnhart, good to see you.
It's very good to be here.
They're here.
Representative Barnhart has been renamed Representative Lazarus.
What's that one? He's thinking. Good to see you. Are you feeling back to 100%? 78?
I think Representative Farr had it right.
Is that right? 60%. Okay, well, you look good. It's good to have you back.
Thank you. It's good to be here, sir.
Okay, for those of you who don't know, Representative Barnhart, it's been, what, more than 2 weeks now, hasn't it?
Yes.
Out for appendix surgery?
And yes. And subsequent issues.
Yeah. Ooh. Okay, well, good to have you back.
Thank you.
Okay, we interrupt. We're back to our regular programming. Steve?
House Bill 2852 would direct the 23-member task force on special education to continue their study and make additional recommendations. It does add two new areas for making recommendations. One is to analyze the education database for special education cost trends, and the other is to assess the feasibility of a quality education style model for predicting special education costs. It would require a new report to the education interim committees prior to October 1st of 2004. Then the other part of the bill is to, again, set aside state school fund dollars to pay costs for the task force. Oh. It sets a limit of $100,000 for 03-04 and $50,000 in 04-05, both amounts coming out of the state school fund.
Okay. And we're hearing it only today, but also I note this has a fiscal impact with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay.
All right. Representative Hobson, did you want to say anything on this before we bring our witnesses up? It's your
Thank
bill.
Thank you, yeah. Mr. Chair. I would like to. And yeah. I would like to go and look you eyeball to eyeball.
Okay.
I may.
You may. No. And while you're going, I will apologize in advance. I've got a hearing up in Senate Judiciary that I may be called out to, so if I do, I will try to be discreet and quiet as I step out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Elaine Hobson, and I am State Representative from District 32, and I also serve on this committee as well as the House Education Committee. I bring this bill to you at the recommendation of the task force that worked very diligently during the interim to try and address some of the needs in special education. And I think as we've all become aware during the current session, the whole school funding issue is of prime concern, as are all funding issues in the whole state. But we want to make sure that special education does not get lost in the shuffle. We have funds available from the federal government to deal with some of the special education issues, but it nowhere covers the cost for these special children. So the purpose of this bill is to focus totally on the funding issue of special ed. During the committee that met during the interim actually focused on four separate areas. And the one that in particular that we were unable to come to a good resolution or even adequate recommendations was the whole issue of funding. because there are many, many cases of children who may cost as much as $60,000 a year in order to provide those services. There are a number of plans out there that we've taken a look at to try and address this, but it still needs to be taken into consideration with the whole special ed picture, which in turn needs to be taken into consideration with the whole school funding picture. There are a couple of things in the bill that we certainly are interested in taking a look at. The size of the committee, we may want to take a look at modifying that at some point. It was interesting during the interim, I was quite sure that the governor's office found out exactly the date for our task force to meet and then scheduled a special session. So you can well imagine we had a very difficult time getting together. We want to make sure that we have not only people in the education and the finance area, but also parents of children with these special needs. They are the ones who can speak not only from the heart, but from the reality and the practical experience of dealing with these young people. And I'll keep this short and sweet. I am having distributed to you a summary of the Special Education Task Force. I know you've all read the full report many, many times by your bedstands, but just in case you can't put your hands on it, we are going to distribute to you the summary for your review. This is indeed, I don't like to use the word problem because educating our children isn't a problem, but some of these young people have special needs and we do need to address those. I do note the fiscal note that concerns me greatly. I would like to find out from the Department of Education what the cost was this last time because I don't think it was up to the $150,000. And we would certainly look at ways to reduce that cost as much as we could. So I'd be willing to answer any questions.
Questions for Representative Thompson.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Is in the quality education model, special education is not incorporated in that?
Thank you, Representative Haas. I can't believe I did that. I'm always the one that says Haas, like, and Bass, and then I say Haas. We talked about that a great deal on the task force, on trying to do an analysis of special ed funding and needs that would reflect what was done with the quality ed model. In the quality ed model that we have now, there are costs assigned for special ed, but we would like to really go within the whole special ed area and do one there as well to try and identify the numbers and the needs of kids at various levels. One of the things that's so confounding in this whole area is some of your special needs kids are actually served within the classroom and don't cost a lot extra. A good teacher has his or her plans developed so they cover a wide range of students' ability, skills, and needs. On the other hand, we have, as I mentioned before, some that can cost almost $60,000. How do we differentiate between those? How do we plan to address this wide span of needs and costs? And we didn't have it defined. That was one of the reasons for the extension of the funding part of the task force, is to try and determine what do we need to do to have a plan in place that will address these unique circumstances.
The questions, Representative Berger.
I just have a couple of comments. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of my questions was, what was the budget in 0103? That was my first question, and I'm glad to hear you say you want to find out about that, because $150,000 in these days and times seems like a lot of money. And just on the surface of it, I also like something else that you said, and that was you're going to reevaluate the size of the committee. It looks to me like it's extremely unwieldy to get together, to get some things done.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, you're absolutely correct. The money that is being suggested for this committee actually comes out of the Department of Education's budget. I'm not real happy about that because I will be fighting to make sure that we don't take money out of their budget. So I think there are a number of options we can look at there, particularly with a committee reduced in size.
Well, in clarification on that, I guess the NCE report says it directs the money out of the state school fund.
Yes.
Not out of the department's budget, but out of the state school fund.
No, the state school fund is part
of
their budget.
Right, I understand. But this is the
on which part
this is
talking
money
about.
That otherwise would be distributed?
Yes, it
okay.
would.
Okay, yeah, that's what I mean.
Thank you, Mr.
Operations budget. Yeah, okay. Thanks. Questions any further? Representative Barnhart, you ready?
Yes,
okay.
If I may. And, and it really shows
take
a lot.
Take it easy.
My question really indicates a lack of preparation, and so I apologize for it in advance. Representative Hobson, is part of the task of this task force to come up with some specific recommendations for how we would deal financially with the low incidence, very high cost students?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, exactly. Those are the ones who really do cost a great deal and for which a district can't prepare adequately financially, particularly a small district where that is a hunk of the budget.
Right.
I would say that that was one of the major factors encouraging or pushing us to continue that part of it, because we wrestled with it, but we didn't come up with some clear plans. And again, this is something that still needs to be integrated within the total funding. One of the things that we've done is we've very clearly said, well, we'll just give the double weight and that'll take care of everything. Well, in fact, it hasn't and it doesn't. Again, one of the pieces I think we want to be very careful to do is to, again, look at the big picture. There are other questions about school funding in general, and we, in the past, have kind of separated the two, and there are some needs to look at them differently, but we still want to look at the big picture as well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
If I could just follow up on that. You know, the reason I asked the question is because you mentioned $60,000 is sort of the upper limit. The fact, of course, is that we all know about cases that have been several times that much. Very few of them, fortunately, but still extremely expensive. And in Eugene, for example, had a case involving a student with extreme needs who had to be educated out of state to the tune of something like $250,000 a year. Now, Eugene is a pretty good-sized district, and even though it was a huge amount of money, was able to absorb it without a terrible difficulty, but a small district facing that kind of expense would have been in very big trouble. And that's the reason I asked the specific question. This is one issue that I've been working on sort of intermittently since about 1995, when I first learned about it when I was on the school board. So I'm very glad that this commission is finally going to see if we can't find another way of dealing with those very low incidence, high cost students, hopefully on a statewide basis rather than saddling a small school district with the luck of the draw, as it were.
Anything else for Representative Hobson? Okay, thanks. Let's bring up Catherine West, Susan Ramirez, and Ozzie Rose, if you all want to come on up together, if that's okay. You're all on the same team, it looks like. Who wants to go first?
I guess I will, okay. Since I'm on the left side. Good morning, Chair Shetterly, members of the committee. My name is Susana Ramirez, and I am a parent of a 19-year-old son with autism. I work as a special education advocate at the Oregon Advocacy Center, which is part of the protection and advocacy systems federally mandated to protect the rights of individuals with disabilities through legal advocacy. I am testifying before you today, though, as a parent, as a former member of the legislative task force. I am in support of House Bill 2852 to continue the work of the Funding and Accountability Committee to take a look at the cost of special education-related services and possibly developing a quality education model to see what these costs are. During my work in the task force, I chaired the Performance Standards, Accountability, and Expectations Committee. It's a huge, long name. And basically, we looked at outcomes, and outcomes meaning what product do we have when kids leave special education? Are parents being served through the dispute resolution issue resolution provisions, you know, how are those disputes being resolved. And we also looked at accountability in the sense of data. What data do we have to follow our kids? And so one of the things that we came to the agreement as a group early on, because it was a large group, was that we were not going to be able to fulfill the charge because it was only 10 months, and we need to remember that special education as a whole has never been looked at since the passage of the IDEA in 75. So it is a huge task. Each of the four subcommittees worked very hard not to make too many recommendations, and I guess my message to you today is to make sure that we don't lose those recommendations. Each subcommittee, which we had four, made about eight recommendations, and it was really hard to get to that point because not everything is about funding. It's about how we deliver special education. Do we make it higher cost because of the way we're doing it? So it really is a very complex issue, and it requires more than just funding. And so one of my requests to this committee is to look at all those other recommendations and not lose them, perhaps through a different group, or people have talked about maybe a budget note. And I do want to mention that the funding subcommittee did not have a parent membership because there were three parents and there were four subcommittees. So in the future we need to ensure that parents are involved in every subcommittee so that we really are part of the policy making. And I thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify, and if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Good point. Thank you. Questions for Ms. Ramirez? All right, thank you very much. Ms. White, and I'm sorry, I misread your signature.
Oh. Thank you. Representative Shetterly, members of the committee, my name is Catherine White, and I'm here with the Developmental Disabilities Coalition and FACT. The Disabilities Coalition is a coalition of the major stakeholders in the developmental disabilities community, including providers, advocates, and families. FACT is an organization that is a coalition of small organizations that focus on the issues cross-disability, mental health and developmental disabilities, learning disabilities, that focus on children and family issues for people with disabilities. We supported the creation of this task force. As Susanna mentioned, this is really the first time in almost 30 years since the enaction of the civil rights legislation that created access to education for children with disabilities, the first time we've started really looking at the system. In those 30 years, we've added funding, massive amounts of funding, service delivery models, different services. We've served children that we did not serve initially. And so this is really the first time that we've taken a serious look at the whole system. And as Representative Hobson mentioned, it was a huge task with many interruptions and special sessions. We support the continuation of the work of the task force, whether it is in the form of the larger task force or in other kinds of work groups, because we think that the kinds of discussions, the hydraulics of special education funding and state school fund funding warrant some very serious discussions. And as Susanna mentioned, we believe also that it's very important not to lose the recommendations of the task force, because funding is also very closely tied with the service delivery models, the kind of services we provide, best practices, and all of these things need to be looked at very carefully. We're particularly interested in taking a look at the mediation issues and the outcomes issues. And again, we also encourage the involvement of families. The FACT organization represents a broad spectrum of families, and we do our effort to help educate families so they're true partners in this process of special education, and I think that's in the best interests of both schools and families, and most importantly, the children we're trying to serve.
All right, thank you, Ms. White. Any questions? All right,
Ozzie Rose. Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Ozzie Rose with the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. And as the previous speakers, we were supportive of this task force being formed last time. And there is a need to continue the work of the task force. There are some changes coming to you from the Senate as a result of the task force work dealing with the formula, and I think you're aware of that. But there is a need for further discussion of the not just the funding. We get really tied up in whether it ought to have a weight or not a weight, and which kind of distorts what the formula was all about. The formula was a distribution formula, not a spending formula, da-da-da-da. You've heard that speech. But there is an issue of the right delivery models, the best practices at the best prices, et cetera, that we can get services to kids. It's going to be compounded in that IDEA is being reauthorized at the federal level this time. By the end of the summer, we'll have a new federal law on IDEA. And all indications are it's going to have lots of the tone and style of No Child Left Behind. And we're not going to be totally happy, I don't believe, with some of the directions. And we're going to have to find ways to work with that.
Will it have funding with it?
On the grounds that I'd say something really stupid, I won't answer that question.
It's all funding left behind.
We need to take advantage of the database that we have. We're getting a really good tool on how to work with stuff. We need to take the components of the QEM and work at our special ed issues related to that. We don't think we need a task force this big, and we'd like you to go a little bit slow and give us time to work with the department and some other people, because you have a set of recommendations from the task force. Somebody needs to be paying attention to those, maybe amend them some, maybe add some others, but we don't think that you need to have the task force as big as the one we had last time. We need to continue the work of the task force, and I would hope that you would give us a little bit of time to work on that, but press that issue.
Okay. Just my response to that, Ozzie, what I think the deadlines we're working under is hearing by this Friday, work session by next Friday. Is that it on House bills? So whatever we do, we're going to have to do in some haste. So I'd recommend that we work with Representative Hobson to get at least some fashion put together here that everybody's agreeable on, so we can get this at least down to Ways and Means, if that is where it's going to have to go because of a revenue impact. Or
maybe we can
talk about that too. But
I'd like to get it so it doesn't have to go.
I understand that. I say we can have that discussion too between now and next week. But that's going to be our time frame.
Okay.
But that's not to say that there isn't time to work on it in the Senate too. But we'd like to have it in ship shape before it goes out. All right. Any questions for Ozzie? Representative
Bridger. I have a question probably for you, Mr. Chairman. This sunset is just for the next biennium?
Yes.
Extends the sunset?
Okay. The new sunset is in 2005.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. Lynn Lundquist. The late Lynn Lundquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lynn Lundquist, Oregon Business Association, and also would like to speak from the idea of the QEC, the Quality Education Commission, since I was involved in that as well. We, as OBA, supported this bill when we had it last session. I talked to Representative Hobson earlier this session about the idea we need to come back to continue the work on the funding level. The funding level is I'm going to speak from that angle and not from the service level. It was apparent to me when I visited many schools around the state that there was concern, even within some of the administrators, that the funding level for the special ed was not. Most people talk about the high, low incidence, high cost situation. Some of the administrators also want to talk about, is the system getting used as well as it should, or is it getting abused in some cases? Because obviously, the way the formula is, it encourages students to stay into that program, and is that right for the students? And so that's why we had an interest in that. And when the department came to the QEC and gave the report this last interim, we questioned them because we were looking for information. That's what we need. The QEC needs to take the special ed and put it in the QEC so we can come to an overall aggregate figure. And the fact of the matter was, because of the very short time frame you had, you didn't get started, I don't think, for the first year, actually, and then the fact of the special session and so forth, in our opinion, their report really didn't give us the confidence level that we could really put it into the QEC, and so you will not find it in the QEC. And when you stop and think, the special ed is about $1 billion you're talking about. So it's fairly significant, to say the least, in the K-12 system. And I think we need to have a higher confidence level, and as Ozzy said, the database is becoming better. But it's not just the high cost, it's also the low cost. I asked, for example, the Department of Ed person at that time, you know, how did you come up with this, you know, you're still staying with 2.0. And they talked about certain students had about a 0.5 and some had, you know, 1 and some had 2 and on up to 4. And I asked what percentage of the students in each one of these categories, and they really couldn't say. The point of it is I just think there needs to be more work at that. And I would certainly encourage you to put the pressure on Legislative Fiscal to keep this cost down, because I don't believe it was that much last time. But again, if you're looking at $1 billion that you're spending, probably you need to spend a little bit to try to see if you can spend, do a better job of spending it.
Thank you. Any questions? Well, I tell you what then. Thank you. And does anybody else wish to testify on House Bill 2852 before I close the public hearing? What I'll ask is maybe Steve, if you'll work with Representative Hobson and see if we can get any amendments and also follow this up with Ways and Means and see if there's any prospect of getting that referral rescinded, and then let's get this back next week sometime.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Close public hearing on House Bill 2852. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2625. Mazin is making his way to the desk. And as he does, well, we'll wait. We've got a couple of panels here.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
Members of the committee, House Bill 2625, I've included in your packet a copy of the tax expenditure report page that deals with this particular exemption. It is an exemption for cargo containers, and it is done in the tax expenditure report for the 0103 at 500,000 and 0305, you find no revenue impact. And the reason, of course, for that the tax expenditure have already sunsetted in July of 2002. This would be an extension or reactivation of the exemption to the year 2010. It is worth it to note that in 1979, the U.S. Supreme Court exempted or decided that it needs to be an exemption for containers used for foreign commerce under the foreign commerce provisions of the U.S. Constitution. However, later on, I'm not sure which year was that, the Attorney General in Oregon decided that the containers used in the state are personal property and need to be taxed accordingly. So with that, since there will be a separation between which is used for international commerce or foreign commerce and which is used for within, that will impact the about $40 million of assessed value property and make about $1 million impact per biennium. That's $500,000 a year with no fiscal.
All right. Let's see. Why don't we start off with Rob? Do you want to come up first? Are you with Mr. Staple and Mr. Levitt and Mr. Krug? We'll take you and Mr. Staple, I guess, then. Let's start with that. Rob.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Rob Douglas, representing the Columbia River Steamship Operators Association. With me on my right is Todd Staple from K-Line. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for bringing this bill before the committee. I am here, and I'm very sheepish because Oregon has never, to the best of my knowledge, taxed these containers, and it was a surprise to me to find out that the exemption had actually sunsetted in, I believe, July of 2002. We had actually, as you know, Mr. Chairman, asked Legislative Council to draft this in a fashion where we just exempt them without any of these rolling dates, because you can see today that we're here before you and the exemption has expired. We do encourage your support for House Bill 2625. We feel it is essential for commerce, for the state of Oregon. Todd does business and is aware of other ports' approach to this, and to the best of our knowledge, they do not tax these cargo containers, so we would ask for the same for Oregon.
All right. Please.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Todd Staple, General Manager of K-Line for Portland. I've worked for K-Line for 13 years. And through those 13 years, I've seen, an impact on of revenue and cost in our operations, increasing labor and operational costs, corporate centralization, and the cost of national security. And all these things have an effect on the decisions that K-Line makes in which ports they choose to call. We did some research on this property tax issue, and K-Line found that K-Line is not currently being assessed any property tax on containers in any state in the country. The containers are a transient in nature. A large percentage of the K-Line business is loading over Portland via rail traffic moving from other states. Carrier business is extremely cost sensitive, and these costs can have a negative impact on the weekly intermodal volumes moving through Portland. These containers, can be redirected to other ports, and I've personally worked very hard to increase the amount of rail traffic that moves through Portland, citing actually some cost savings. Cost increases will be considered in pricing decisions and can have a negative impact on Oregon imports and exports. And carriers right now, especially after 9/11, are struggling with the increased costs of national security. So based on these issues, I would hope that you'll find that supporting this exemption is really what Oregon needs right now.
Okay. Questions? So that I understand then, Rob, you're saying, well, I guess, was this a sunset that got away from us? Is that what
Mr. Chairman, it got away from me.
Okay. I don't recall it being something we talked about specifically last session by any means. Question about the containers. We do tax rail cars, right? Somebody help me out. John Phillips, do we tax rail cars? I think we do. So when a container leaves a port and becomes affixed to a flat car, does it become taxable? Maybe that's John or somebody can tell me how that's treated. Do you know offhand?
Mr. Chairman, I do not.
Okay. I've just been summoned by the... no, I have not. Never mind.
Not surprised.
No, I'm sorry.
So have I, actually.
Okay. Any other questions for these gentlemen?
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Let's bring Keith Levitt and Jeff Krug.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Keith Levitt with the Port of Portland, and we urge you to pass House Bill 2625. Rob kind of took the responsibility for forgetting about this sunset, but I would claim that I did the same thing. Last session, we probably should have had this bill before you. This exemption dates back to 1974, which was about the time when containerization on vessels really began in this country and at the Port of Portland. This is an important bill from the standpoint of continuing to have a state policy in place here in Oregon that encourages marine commerce. And a lot of you on this committee have been out to Terminal 6 and seen our container operation just about every, there are businesses throughout just about every county in the state that ship products through that terminal out to foreign markets. And our ability to continue to bring carriers into Portland to serve this market is a very challenging proposition. And with me is Jeff Krug from our marine marketing department that can speak a little more coherently than I can on that. But with that, I would like to pass it over to Jeff and have him go into that. And again, we'll be able to answer questions after Jeff's done. Thanks.
Good morning. We lost our chairman, so I should introduce myself to the vice chair.
There you go.
Good morning, madam, and committee members. My name is Jeff Krug. I'm general manager of ocean carrier development for the Port of Portland. In my job, I go out and market port facilities to ship owners throughout the world and also handle contracting negotiations for the use of the port facilities. Just in terms of perspective at the on the container side, of which Keith just spoke of, and part of the port's mission is to provide competitive transportation access to the citizens of Oregon that want to do business in both the national and international trade. And currently we have six different ship services calling Terminal 6 on a regular basis. You heard from K-Line America. They're one of our biggest customers. But these ships carry products to Asia, the west coast of South America, the Mediterranean, Australia, New Zealand, and the South Pacific. On an average year, just to put it in perspective, Terminal 6 handles about 140,000 to 180,000 containers to and from a vessel, another 40,000 or 50,000 to and from rail cars. We bring them in by barge from upriver ports of Umatilla and Boardman, and we certainly bring a lot of containers in by truck. So what this all means is a lot of jobs are created in this associated with this business, not only on the longshore side, but for trucking companies, barge companies, a lot of residual effect on the job market in Oregon. As far as Portland's competitive position versus the other U.S. West Coast ports in the container business, I think you can characterize it as best as we're a small fish in a big pond. We're a very small player in the container market, 2 to 3%. There's various reasons for that. We're a small population base. We're an inland port located 8 hours up the river, but I think because of that, we have to always be very aggressive in how we do our business to keep the current services that we have in Portland, serving Oregon. So that's why a tax such as this would be very detrimental in our efforts to attract and maintain our current services in Portland. And just one last thing to wrap up on the cost side of things. That's a very key thing, as Todd spoke of earlier, to the carriers. In the late 1990s, the Federal Maritime Commission deregulated ocean transportation in the United States. And similar to the airline industry, carriers on the ocean side have struggled to remain profitable. And in 2002, it was particularly a horrible year for most ocean transportation carriers, particularly in the container segment of their business lines. So any tax like this that would be unique to the state of Oregon would be a very big detriment and a very difficult thing for us to overcome. So I would urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Any questions? It's curious. I don't suppose anyone can help me with the history lesson here, but this exemption was apparently passed in 1979, but for tax years beginning on or after July 1, 1974. There must have been some appeals in process or something on that. It's very interesting that you would have an exemption passed in 1979 and retroactive 5 years. Not that I expected you to know.
Mr. Chair, I was in grade school at that time, but I think Rob Douglas was still in the building then.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to go back to your question about the rail. What is the difference in the way that the containers are taxed if they go by truck or go by rail or go by ship?
You know. You guys deal with the port.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Verger, it's a complex, I know they're centrally assessed, I know the Department of Revenue is probably the people to ask on that, but it is, these containers are moving, they're so transient, they're coming from foreign countries, they're coming from out of state, that I think the ability of a local or state government to assess these particular containers is would be very difficult.
Okay. So again, these are cargo containers primarily used for cargo transportation on ocean-going ships. That's what we're talking about. Okay. And I suppose if they change their character and end up on a train in Pendleton, that's something that we're not dealing with here. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Anybody else have any questions? Thank you. Gil Riddell. John Phillips, do you have any answers to any of the questions we've been... Okay.
Where's our railroad lobbies when we need...
Yes, right. That's right. Where's our fetter? We'll have this back up next week and maybe get some of those answers. Yeah. Okay. Gil.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. I'm not here to rain on anybody's parade. I simply wanted to thank this committee for helping to make the tax expenditure report a working document. it has been useful, and it will continue to be useful, and your committee has helped focus attention on what it reports. I would remind the committee, however, that the under Sunset Program, the burden of having the sunset adjusted is on the folks who receive the tax expenditure. I'd feel a little more comfortable if the evaluation were a bit stronger. The last sentence in the report says this exemption may be effective, but for that reason, I'm glad you have the sunset. You have a later sunset date on this. I wouldn't argue that you should eliminate this.
Okay. Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any questions for Gil? All right. Anybody here from the Revenue Coalition for a leaflet drop? Okay, yeah, I know. You're not even signed up. I'm so well trained.
But I actually won't be testifying on behalf of the Revenue Coalition, but with my AFL-CIO hat on. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Patrick Green with the Oregon AFL-CIO. And we would like to testify in favor of House Bill 2625. And for a number, as you know, we've been very rigorous about our about the way that we have looked at tax expenditures. And I'll remind the committee, because I know that you've seen it so many times that the eyes begin to glaze over, and so have I. So I can relate to that. One of the things that we've talked about before, and we'll hear more about it on April 18th, and I hope that you'll ask Tim Nesbitt and Lori Wimmer, Whalen, about, is the whole nature of how we've been weighing the income tax versus the property tax. And I know in conversations individually with some of you, we have talked about how over time, through this project of doing the Revenue Coalition work, we've seen that, you know, all things being equal, the income tax seems a whole lot better, a whole lot better tax or a fairer tax, because it's based on the ability to pay versus the property tax, which, you know, we have, I'm not telling you anything that you don't already know, but basically the property tax, who you have to pay anyway, regardless of profitability. The thing that makes House Bill 2625 palatable for the Oregon AFL-CIO is a number of reasons. First, it is, you can put an asterisk in front of it. It's essentially an extension, right? This isn't necessarily, this isn't really a new tax expenditure. This is something that we've had on the books. It's also something that is, for the reasons that the previous panel stated, we are competing in a global economy. If we are the only port, if we are indeed the only state that has ports that doesn't exempt property taxes, then we are at a competitive disadvantage. You know, we'll be realistic about that. The other thing is that this is strategic. The port is something that's a strategic, the Port of Portland, the other ports are a strategic asset. It's something that a large part of our economy relies on. This isn't sort of, well, maybe we'll, I mean, some of the things that we've been critical about it are those projects that, well, maybe we'll attract this new business, or maybe we'll attract this new industry. This is something that we have now that the state relies on and has since its founding. It also obviously supports living wage jobs. Longshore workers make good living wage jobs with benefits. Communities rely on those jobs. Their families rely on those jobs. And for the strategic reasons, competing in the global economy, the fact that this is an extension, and the fact that it's a property tax exemption as opposed to income tax, are all reasons why the Oregon AFL-CIO can support this bill.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any questions for Patrick Green? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, since Patrick has backslidden on this issue for the Revenue Coalition, anybody else from the Revenue Coalition want to speak? Okay. I like the stars have aligned. We have the counties, and we have at least the guy from the Revenue Coalition all lined up on a property tax exemption. Let's get this scheduled for work session at a convenient time. It sounds to me like there won't be a lot to this, so we'll get it scheduled and popped out. No amendments, I take it. We're all set to go. It looks pretty straightforward. But, John, if you want to have some questions, some answers for us just for work session, so we can get a couple of those things answered, we'll have you back up for that. All right. Thank you, everybody. We'll close public hearing on House Bill 2625. I don't have any sign up on House Bill 3418 or 3419. Is anybody here desperate to tell us what they think about either one of those bills? If not, I'll just tap those in, open the public hearing on House Bill 3418, and I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3418. I'll open the hearing on House Bill 3419, and I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3419. And now we'll go to House Bill 3033, Representative March.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Steve March. I represent District 46 in the center of Portland. And I'm coming to you today with some amendments to House Bill 3033. When you try to do two things in once, you wind up doing neither very well. I was both trying to provide some additional money for and direction to the Oregon Student Opportunity Commission, and at the same time provide the revenue with it. And I recognized that the revenue piece was flawed, so my amendments would remove the revenue component of this bill and therefore take it out of your jurisdiction. And so I would ask that the committee have a work session on it to move the amendments and pass it on to Ways and Means without recommendation at a future date that you can arrange. Any questions?
All right. Are there any questions for Steve? No questions.
Okay, well, all thank right. you. It's a good program, but just in the wrong committee at this time.
All right.
With
thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, Ken Armstrong.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Ken Armstrong. We are representing the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association. We had some concerns about this bill. The dash ones appear to resolve our concerns.
All right. Very good. Thank you very much. All right. John Powell.
John left.
All right. All right. Well, that looks like that takes care of this bill. So we will move to House Bill 2990, and we'll call back Representative March and Chris Chapman.
You need to open the public hearing.
I will, thank you. I will open the public hearing on House Bill 2990.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Steve March. I represent District 46 in the center of Portland still. And I appreciate you hearing this matter. I'm going to leave most of the testimony to my assistant and to the written testimony that you've gotten. And if you'd give me a copy. Oh, you slipped it over here. You have the bill. Anyhow, I want to draw your attention to specifically line 15, which we purposely left blank as to the percentage for you to consider for this tax credit. this is a growing issue as we have more and more transplants and the amount of time that it takes out of an individual's life. But we also recognize the structure that we're in terms of revenue. So I wanted to leave that to the committee. We also did not put a cap on the amount of income that an individual might be making to apply for this. So we, again, leave that to your wisdom. And thirdly, we had on line 9, we talked about a recovery period ending on the 90th day, and I think that was we were trying to tell the Legislative Council that up to 90 days. So one could not claim more than 90 days of missed work, for example, or missed income, but could claim, say, 30. We didn't want to automatically make it a 90-day claim. But some of those technical things could also be taken care of by Oregon administrative rules through the Department of Revenue. And I'll turn it over to Chris Chapman, my legislative assistant, and let her testify.
All right. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Vice Chair Verger, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to address your committee regarding House Bill 2990. My name is Chris Chapman, and I've worked as a legislative aide to Representative March since January 2001. I'm the reason this bill is before you today, and I am a kidney donor. In submitting House Bill 2990, my one and only goal is to make the transplant process a little easier for those involved. My bill would give a tax credit to people who donate or receive organs, and I affectionately call this the Oregon Kidney Plan, or OKP. There are approximately 200 kidney transplants per year in the state of Oregon and approximately 100 liver transplants. So only a small number of people would even be eligible under House Bill 2990. There are two groups of people who could benefit from this bill: people who are seriously ill to the point where they need a donated organ, and people who are about to voluntarily disrupt their own lives to help someone else. It is my personal belief that people in either of these groups deserve a small break. That is what I'm trying to do with this bill. My original idea was to give people of either group a tax credit for the time it takes to recover, approximately 2 to 3 months. My intent was to give these people one less thing to worry about as they recover. Because there are not a great number of people who could ever use this credit, I want to be as generous as possible. My intent is also that House Bill 2990 benefit the lower-income Oregonians who qualify. To that end, a cap on the amount allowed under this bill is something I would support. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Any questions for Chris? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Have there been any calculations made yet on the cost of this bill for various caps and various percentages of credit?
Thank you, Vice Chair Verger, Representative Barnhart. No, sir, because it's my understanding that it needed to be heard here in committee before any numbers could be worked up. But if there's my best guess at the numbers is there would be between 300 and 400 people at the most per year eligible for this, and the cap on them would be at just ballpark figure would be a cap of say $1,000, so that this would not total very much money in a year that it was in place. But I don't have specific numbers.
Other questions? I don't have a question, but I have a comment. I just greatly admire donors. I think that it is, in fact, I do not carry a card, though most all of my family do. And one of these days, I guess they're going to have to convince me that that's what I should do. But I just want to say that to you, Chris. It's a wonderful thing. And if there are no other questions, then I thank you for coming today. And
thank you, Representative Berger.
I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2990, and I failed to close the House Bill on 3033, so may I do that now? All right, thank you. Sorry about that.
I apologize. I think I jumped the button.
That's all right. No, I was. I, as long as we get them all closed, then that's just fine. And I believe that that's it for the day. I don't have anything else in front of me, so if there's no other business to come before this body, I'll call the meeting adjourned.